Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Rivamy.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the podcast, we're diving back, we're jumping back to the 90s.
Oh, gotta go 90s.
Classic 90s.
When fashion was great and movies were a reasonable length.
I agree with one of those things.
I agree with both of those things, but we can discuss.
The fashion was era appropriate. We're talking about 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The film, not the series. We're talking about that OG hit.
The original Buffy, she was slaying way back in the day with Luke Perry before anyone else was slaying.
Yes.
And you might be asking yourselves, why would you do Buffy the Vampire Slayer
this week? Why Buffy, why now, you say?
Well, let's go on a little journey about Morbius the movie, which was supposed to come out at the end of this month. So we said, hey, let's do like vampire movies as a build up to Morbius. And you know what? You're going to laugh, guys. Morbius ain't coming out.
It might not exist. We made the assumption that the world would move forward and we didn't. So here we are, hat in hand, still going ahead with a vampire movie, up to a vampire movie that will not come out next week. It's not out.
Guys, we wrote
it. Don't go looking for it.
We wrote it in the schedule. So we're doing it.
It's too late to change it. Here we are. We're doing 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer for no reason other than joy. We're doing it just for our own sheer pleasure.
It is pleasurable, and maybe next week we'll just do a review of what we think Morbius was like.
We should do that next
week. Just a blind review.
next week, Morbius. Leto sucks.
Called it.
And moving on.
Let's see how much we can get right.
And everyone else in the film, we wish the best. That's what we got going on. But we're talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This week, we're going to be joined by guest Kaya Green shortly. Kaya is the host of the new podcast on the network called The Fandom Show. They have an episode out about Buffy. So if you want to hear more Buffy, you can go check out The Fandom Show on this network, wherever you're listening to this right now. But we're going to be talking more Buffy the Vampire Slayer in just a second. But before we do, we want to thank our wonderful friends over at Pay the Price.
Pay the Price. So fun. If you love party games like Cards Against Humanity or What Do You Meme, then you're going to love this hilarious new trivia party game, Pay the Price, that I think was designed for Diana's.
You are really jazzed about Pay the Price.
I love trivia games. So it's trivia. It's trivia. Pop culture.
Let's break down what you're getting here with Pay the Price. All right. It is a fun party game. It's trivia. So if you like trivia, like Diana does, you're in. Step one, hacker voice, you're in.
Step one, like trivia. Now, I like trivia, but I have huge blind spots in my trivia knowledge, and I never win trivia. I never, fail, but I never win. But Pay the Price is made for me, because what you can do if you get a trivia question wrong, you get a consequence card, which has a dare on it. And you don't have to do the dare, but if you do the dare, you get to the point for the card. Mm-hmm. So you can win the game with getting no questions right or just on pure brawny
boldness. Yeah.
On pure boldness. And what I can do is answer half of trivia questions and be bold. And have fun doing it.
And I that is a dynamic that we really enjoy. Because also in this household, we've been watching a lot of Taskmaster, which I feel like is another game that rewards intelligence or the bold. Mm-hmm. And that this is something that I like about this. You can be smart and you can advance that way. Or you can just go for it, my friend. And that's going to get you some points as well.
And I like that you don't have to do the dare. But the dares are very fun, very reasonable things. You can dance with no music. You can talk without your lips touching. You can let the group scroll through the photos on your phone, which could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. But so it's really, really fun dares that are going to be like really enjoyable. But also like you're going to earn that point.
Yeah, you're gonna make it happen.
You're gonna pay the price.
You're gonna pay the price, or just be intelligent.
Or
just gonna be intelligent.
If you're intelligent, well, that's
that has
too.
Value. You can pay the price via your intelligence, as we all do. That's how jobs work. But we want to thank our friends over at Pay the Price. Head over to paytheprice.com to get your copy, and be sure to use the promo code SUPER. SUPER at checkout to get 20% off your purchase. That's paytheprice.com and enter the code SUPER, SUPER at checkout so you receive 20% off. Enjoy a hilarious game night with friends. And thank you, Pay the Price, for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you for existing. You're fun.
Thank you for doing your thing. And now let's get into it. Let's talk about 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Right, so we have rewatched 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and we are joined by our guest, one of the hosts of the Fandom Show podcast, which is out right now at thefandomshow.com, or search The Fandom Show wherever you get your podcasts. It's on this network. It's our friend, Kaya Green. Hello, Kaya.
Hello, it's me, just quietly sitting here while you slander 90s fashion. How dare you, Andrew?
Love having someone here to pile on, Andrew, with me. This is fun. This is all immediately fun.
I would wear
every outfit in this film. I would wear the girls' outfits. I would wear the guys' outfits. I would wear, well, not Paul Rubens. Everyone who's not a vampire, I would wear.
You know what? I gotta say, I liked a lot of them. I mean, like, I would kind of probably avoid some of the neon tight numbers, but that's just me and my personal preference. But the, like, the combat boots with the plaid, yes.
All right.
Every plaid.
I would lean more into the neon items, oddly. I'd be like, yeah, give me some purple neon stockings.
Get it. Discover yourself.
I'm kind of okay with that. I don't mind it.
I think every shirt was a bodysuit, and I love a good tight tank top that looks real, like, that will just, like, you know, it's never going to ride up.
Right. Form-fitting. Adore it. You know, it's basically a bathing suit, but with pants.
Basically a bathing suit.
Yeah.
But people don't know. They're just like, you really tucked that in. You're like, of course, it's just really tucked in.
This is just the way I look.
Shirts are this tight, naturally.
See, for me, outside of this film actually, the fashion, not bad. I am going to give you that. The fashion, this film, not bad. I have trauma around 90s fashion in general. I just feel like most 90s fashion was not made with Canadians in mind at any given point.
Oh, yeah, no, I'll give you that.
There is, only wear
it
for a month.
How much time in the... How many of your pants in the 90s had salt stains on the bottom 3 inches of them?
Yep.
All of them?
Yes.
Yes.
At no point was cold weather. Every 90s fashion was designed exclusively for California, and everywhere in the world adopted it with no question or consideration.
I will say this feels like more of an early 2000s problem, because I feel like 90s had more high-waisted and narrow pants, and that was, I feel like that was early 2000s, but like late 90s. So
okay.
I'll give you that.
I definitely had some salt stained jeans, though. You're 100%. Completely right.
Yeah. It was a plague, and I really, I think it's coming back, and I'm afraid for the youth. They don't know what's coming.
No.
Yeah, and like also just like so many like crop tops, and like your pants were supposed to be low enough to see your thongs, and I'm like, I'm cold.
Yes.
We're Canadians, and I'm cold.
Halter tops, that whole thing.
Halter tops.
Never worked for me.
Mm-hmm. What was the other big one I was going to say? Doesn't matter.
Anyway,
they had some
ideas. Buffy.
That's Buffy. Thanks
for listening, everybody.
That's the entirety of Buffy.
We didn't ask the question.
Let's start with the question. Let's start with the simple question of, did you like it? Diana, did you like it?
I loved it. And I thought that was wild, because I remember seeing this like quite young and thinking it was fine and not loving it. I didn't get it when I was a kid. Like, I didn't get it was like satire, parody, like... because the only scenes I remember are the genuinely dramatic scenes. I remember Merrick dying. And I remember Buffy, like, turning down Lothos or whatever his name was, like, when the music's really, really dramatic and she pulls the cross on him.
The violin scene?
Yeah. So these two scenes I remembered were genuinely dramatic. And I'm like, that's Buffy the movie, the dramatic vampire tale. And it's so funny, and it's so knowledgeable and self-aware of what it is, and the fashion looks great, and it's really, really fun, more fun than it has any right to be, and it's an hour and 28 minutes. There's nothing not to love.
There's not too much of it.
And there's just enough Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, and you could give it that.
There is just a slice. Kaya, did you like it?
Well... as a diehard fan of the show, I think... I do like this movie, but I feel like, do you ever go to a restaurant and have a really, really excellent meal and you're like, oh, that's so good, all the flavors are balanced, so delicious, that's the way this should be. And then you go home and you try and make it yourself. And you're like, this tastes sort of like that, but arguably worse, and there's like just too much of one thing and not enough of another thing, and it's like it's a ghost of what the thing you were trying to imitate is. I realize that this doesn't really work because one was made before the other, but for me, that's what this situation is. You watch this movie and you're like, wow, this is like almost the thing I like. It's so close, but I still enjoy it, is the thing.
But it feels like a pale imitation of a thing that came afterwards, which is tricky, but yes. In your mind, you know, things get mushed in our minds, so yes. I understand that.
Exactly. Like, this is, I have referred to this and often do as the Old Testament, because it does have that, like, it's almost there.
Right.
But not quite.
Right. And as we all know, the New Testament has that fun, hot shit. You know?
Of course.
Of course.
Have you ever read that thing?
That's where the, it's just all the bangers.
In the New Testament, God figured his shit out. He's like, I know how to tell a story now. All right. I got the dialogue down.
Yeah, exactly. Let me tell you a thing or two about a rock star named Jesus.
But no, okay. I can feel that.
Andrew, did you like it?
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it a considerable amount. I think I'm maybe closer to Diana on this one. I saw it once when it came out and did not have any ability or to appreciate any of the things that this was doing correctly.
Right.
Like, you know, seeing it at the time on VHS as a child and probably thinking, being like, Paul Reubens is doing a bit much. As if, like, it was a mistake that he's doing that. You know what I mean? Being like, oops, you did too much acting, Paul. Like, as if that was a criticism. But I do remember my memory of this just being like, oh, okay, that was fine. But now on rewatch, I'm like, oh, most of you, I'm going to say 90% of the people involved in making this film are very aware of what it is that they're making.
Yes.
And I do appreciate that level of camp and that level of awareness, at least.
Yeah, totally. It's a very broad film, but like in a very fun way. And it's like, it's so interesting because it is so different and yet so similar in so many ways. But it's kind of, for me, the thing I enjoy most about it is, and for the record, I did like enjoy watching it more than I did the first time. But the thing that I find so interesting, especially as a screenwriting nerd, is you so rarely get to see a before and after of somebody's ideas when they get to do like another draft of it.
Right.
So it's like, oh, it's so cool to be able to see that element of it. It's like what stayed and what didn't.
Yeah, especially for like two big budget things. Like, yeah. It's not like Joss Whedon like did a Clerks and made Buffy based on just like his credit card like payments and like made it himself. Like, two big studios made Buffy 1 and Buffy the Show.
Yeah, this sucker made money.
Yeah.
So, like, it got money back.
Yeah, it's
Kevin
it's,
Smith is also a weirdly good, like, the only, maybe only other example that springs to mind of that, where it's like,
yes.
Oh, you just kept doing Clerks again. And that might be the negative example of that, where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, no, we remember the first time, yeah. Kevin.
It didn't work the first time, Kevin. Why do you keep making it?
I also really like, I only just found out on this watch, I didn't realize how petty Joss Whedon was
about
the canon of Buffy.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Because I have been in a weird, like, Berenstain Bears alternate universe for years. Because I remember in the show, they constantly reference that she burned down a gym one time.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't burn down a gym in this movie.
She does not.
And it's so weird to, like, have some kind of weird Nelson Mandela effect going on when this show is a sequel to the original unfilmed script is such a weird flex, Joss Whedon.
Yeah, it's super weird. Apparently, the unaired pilot for the show, which you can see online and does not have Willow Rosenberg in, or the original actor for that was Riff Reagan. But yeah, apparently that was a direct sequel to the movie.
Okay.
Like, the story's slightly different, and then they made further changes when it actually went to series. So there's, like, a whole bunch of weird alternate timelines between the two things that you could just, like, apparently there's a comic, too, that covers it.
I read about the comic, which is, like, the original script of the movie in a comic version, and Joss is like, this is pretty fucking close.
It's not it, because it's not me,
yeah,
but it is close.
Pretty close, he says.
Yeah, he's super arrogant about his, like, having his hands on it.
And I'm just going to ask you one question, because you know the show better. I feel like there's, like, one episode where she mentions Merrick, her first watcher.
Yes, I believe she does.
I didn't know if he made it into the show canon.
Yeah, I think she does. That I don't recall clearly enough.
Because it's like the early season.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's when Kendra comes through that she mentions that, but like I don't think it's highlighted very much.
Because it causes some continuity issues of how Watchers work. Yeah, but we don't need to get into the weeds.
Yeah, she did have a previous Watcher in the show canon as well. Yeah.
Now, do we know from like behind the scenes stuff, because you're a resident Buffy expert.
Who, me?
It is.
Is it because I won't shut up about it?
That's one of the reasons.
I've never had someone reply to an email faster than the email of, do you want to be on our Buffy episode?
Honestly, yeah. I'll take that. That's fair.
But Andrew, you had a question.
And it was with a tone of, we were making a mistake. It was like, if you want that. It was an energy of like, okay.
Okay, but get ready for opinions.
All right, open my box. I'm Pandora, but good luck, humanity. It is that, so the difference between what the original script and what this movie is, was it the director? Was it the studio? Do we know where the difference came in from, like, what Whedon's original Buffy was?
Yeah, okay, so there were a bunch of the same people involved. So Whedon wrote this this script himself, so no writer's room like you would have for the original Buffy, but, or sorry, for the, damn it, the timelines.
The television Buffy.
The show. Yeah, but essentially he sold the script to Sandollar Productions, which is Dolly Parton's production company.
Oh, shit.
So yes, Dolly Parton is involved.
Dolly Parton doing Buffy, doing vaccines.
Right?
Doing 9 to 5, baby.
Honestly, she really isn't kidding about the hours she's working.
I think she's working more than 8-hour days, frankly.
Yeah. I actually think she should be billing more.
Yes, yeah.
She's not getting paid.
She needs overtime.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so then also, and I've never known the correct pronunciation of their names, but the producers and, for this movie, directors, the Kazai, siblings, I believe, were responsible for making this movie happen. One of them directed it, and they produced it. And then they were also attached to the TV series. So they...
Oh, okay.
So we must have been okay with them.
Yes. So they went back to Whedon, and they were like, hey, we want to redo this. We want to try it again. Except with the medium being TV, the writer gets more power than directors do. I think a lot of the problem with this was... and Whedon was notoriously an asshole on this set, and every set, apparently, we've learned.
Fair enough.
But notoriously bad on this one because, first of all, no one ever wants to have a writer on a feature film set. That's just never a thing. But also, he hated everything about the direction they were taking it in. He really hated Donald Sutherland because he kept improvising his lines. And then Whedon also called him difficult to work with, which is super rich coming from Joss Whedon. But yeah, so a lot of the same people were involved, but like just the fact that they filmed it so fast for Luke Perry's schedule as well, they filmed it in like 2 weeks or something like
that. Whoa, okay.
And I think
working around Luke Perry.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess in the day, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he only had a few weeks off 90210.
That's what he was on, but I don't think he was on that yet.
Yeah, I think this was before that.
This was before that.
Well,
yeah.
Then why don't you have time, Luke Perry?
I don't know what
else
Luke was doing.
Ben Affleck made it. Thomas Jane made it. Mm-hmm. Seth Green's there for a second.
Wait, was he?
Seth Green is one of the vampires. You can see him for half a second.
Oh my God, I totally missed that. Well, now I need to watch it again.
Dang it. Gosh dang it.
So yeah, I feel like it was just a confluence of like kind of uninteresting events that just made it kind of not what he wanted.
Just bland studio bureaucracy is what made it. It's not a huge Clash of Titans screaming match on set between two creatives.
Not
it's
really.
Just a like, yeah, just by committee, slow chipping away from a number of people, it became not the thing that it was intended to be.
Yeah, and I think it was a tonal thing as well. Right. Like as we said, the movie's very broad and very comedic, and I think it works really well in the movie's favor in a lot of ways, but wasn't what he was thinking of. Mm. And this happens to writers every day where their script goes to screen and it isn't the thing they thought of, and they just shut up, take their money, and leave. But Joss Whedon is loud and powerful, so...
And ironically, this is an example where, like, the tables have turned over time.
Well, he kind of got the tables turned on him and then later turned because he would later do like Justice League and then fuck up Zack Snyder's vision of what Justice League was supposed to be. And it's like, you know, you don't like when people do this, Joss.
But it's different because it's him.
I'm a great writer.
You either die the Whedon or live long enough to see yourself become the Whedon. All right. And Snyder became the Whedon, which was like, but that wasn't my vision. We've got to redo it as my vision.
Wait, but when you put it that way, Andrew, either way, you're the Whedon.
That is rough.
That's the problem with filmmaking.
That's a very bleak approach to this.
Oh, no. That is, you don't want to be that.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Okay.
I think you're right, though. I think, like, those are kind of the two types of creative geniuses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's just funny that he ended up, taking over a thing that people were very passionately, like, give us the original creators thing.
Yeah, he became what he hated.
Yeah. You become what you hate.
Become what you hate.
Typical.
Not what you want.
Typical Hollywood story.
Oh, man. Where do we even start with the movie itself?
Okay. For the movie itself, I honestly think, we can go through the cast, but I will say, like, hearing the Donald Sutherland thing, I like Donald Sutherland in this. He doesn't give a fuck, and it's perfect. I'm going to say most actors don't give a fuck in the perfect way or are doing the right amount of everything.
I think Donald Sutherland's pretty good. I wouldn't mind if he tried to lean in a bit more to the comedy.
Okay.
I think the only scene he really nails the tone, and it's not even the tone, but he nails the scene, is him and Buffy alone when he, like, makes his first joke. That is a very touching, funny scene.
Yeah.
But he's never comedic the rest of the movie. And I get being chill and, like, I'm the creepy guy in the change room, always just creeping around. But I wouldn't mind if he was just a bit bigger.
I think I could agree with you. A bit bigger might be good. The moment when he double flicks his mustache
and
then whips a knife at her. One more thing. Mustache flip knife. I'm like, Donald Sutherland knows exactly how absurd this scene was and did all of the right choices, I think. I like that. And I like him even just like, I think the camera, even like the shot selection of this movie also highlights that they know how kind of campy and silly it was. Like his eyes just being just over the lockers as he like imaginary stairs is working his way down is so delightfully funny. And I don't know if it's Donald Sutherland knowing the camera placement or the camera people being like, this is fucking funny that you are 1 inch taller than these lockers. But either way, I think that that's great comedy as well.
That comedy is so good because literally 10 seconds earlier, there were 5 other girls in the locker and he's not hiding in any way. He's taller than the lockers. I don't think there's a second entrance to the locker room that he came in. So he was in there the whole time. So the movie makes a very good joke of that. I don't know if Donald Sutherland did a lot of work. He just stood there.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not giving awards for standing around.
Yeah, I'd say that's my impression of him in this movie a lot of the time is that he's at work.
Yeah. That's the general impression he clocked in that day.
Yeah, yeah. He's not like thrilled to be there, but he's there. Mm-hmm. You know.
Now, was he improvising, Joss, or did he not remember his lines?
Oh, it's the second one. It's for sure the second one.
She's the chosen one?
Buffy, you are a vampire killer. Slayer? Does it have to be Slayer?
It's in the title. Oh, shit. Okay, so I'll get that one. Yeah. I'll get that one for you, Josh. We could change the title.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, he's such a creep in this in a lot of ways. And
but he's
like,
also not creepy at all.
He's not, yeah. It's like everything he does is creepy, but he as a person isn't creepy. So you're like, how am I supposed to feel about you?
It almost feels like they're playing him sometimes in the same way that they're playing Rutger Hauer, where they're just like, you are a creepy little perv.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of your character. Yeah. And I'm like, are you supposed to be the good and evil version of a creepy perv? And I don't know if that's intentional or if it is the fact that either of these actors could play one another's character and there would be no real change to this movie.
I love the idea that Buffy is not the other half of Lotho, but Merrick is. That is because, you know, it's like a Joker Batman kind of like we're two sides of the same coin.
But no, it's Alfred Joker. Alfred Joker are the two sides to the same coin here.
I feel like they both have, they're like, two different uncles on both sides of the uncle spectrum. One uncle owns a car dealership, and he's creepy, and he won't stop talking about his electric violin. And the other one never takes off his trench coat. The two types of uncles.
Two uncles, both alike in dignity, in fair Sunnydale, where we lay our scene.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually can think of, not violin, but I'm like, there is, I brought an instrument uncle, an uncle who uncomfortably never takes his coat off.
Yeah.
That is strong uncle energy.
Yeah, 1 foot out the door uncle. Yeah.
How do we feel about Christy Swanson as Buffy?
I think she's pretty good. I think, like, she, like, gets better as the movie goes. Yeah. She's, like, doesn't land it right away, but as she's going a little more. So weird sound mix in this movie where she's not loud enough, but I don't know if that's her or the sound mix or what's going on. Her kicks are awesome.
Honestly, yeah, I totally agree with that. She actually pulled a lot of those stunts off in a big way. The stunt, like, choreography was garbage, but she looked great doing it.
Yeah, considering, like you said, if they filmed this in 2 weeks, that's amazing. Yeah. Like, her... Because, like, I think the battle at the gym is probably the worst fights. But maybe that was the ones they filmed first because Luke Perry's in them. Because when she's just training with Merrick, she's incredible. Her kicks are boss.
Yeah. Like, they obviously have, like, they do, like, a Texas switch for, like, a gymnast to come in to do all the backflip stuff.
Of course, yeah.
It's like, I walk behind a pillar. Backflip behind another pillar. Hey, it's me again. But she's straight up doing the kicks, though. And it is... It is impressive form. Like, it is powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's like Matrix level, like, eye height, sturdy, powerful kicks.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
There's a moment or two where it looks like Donald Sutherland is a little afraid. A human man, like, not the character. Like, he's holding pads for her. And I'm like, Christy Swanson might have shattered this old fucking man's hand because he is not ready to hold pads for her. He cannot do this.
He just got here and he barely knows his lines. He's alarmed.
He has to hold pads, and you need a stunt actor to sub in for Donald Sutherland's standing because he's in trouble.
Yeah. So she's great at that. And then, like, she's, like, fine as Buffy.
I think part of the problem and why she doesn't quite pop off the top, and even though I do quite like her throughout this movie, I agree with you, Diana, she gets better as it goes on, is that I think she hasn't quite figured out how to make this character pop in the friend group. Like, the friend group, it is very one tone. And I think that, like, that works for one joke, for one beat where it's like, here are four friends who are essentially the same person. And it's like, haha, yeah, I get it. You know, school can be clicky and you just become one another and you don't actually have your own individual personality. That's a one-off joke, but you can't have 30 minutes of a movie doing that.
Yeah.
And I feel like Christy Swanson needed to find something that was like, I'm pretending to be like the other three and I'm not sincerely like it. Or like, you know, like sometimes it's like, I do that, but also I'm actually quite smart and get good grades, but I just fucking love cheerleading and like, I like fashion and there's nothing. There needed to be some twist to make her stand out in the friend group, I think is what's missing.
Yeah, I think this is one of those amazing examples of like how valuable it is to be able to see sort of a before and after of like an almost... second draft of this idea is that like you kind of realize, oh, Buffy's really way more interesting post getting called as a Slayer. Like some origin stories are actually much less interesting than the rest of their story. Mm-hmm. And I think Buffy's origin story is not as interesting because she's so thin as a character prior to that, that like, yeah, you watch her for 30 minutes being pretty vapid. Like, kind of end of list. And even in the show, you see their vapid characters end up having more dimensions to work with. And I think, like, I think Whedon learned from that. I don't want to give him all the credit. Who knows? Right. But, like, I think you can really see the evolution of, like, oh, writing people is just stupid. Even her friends, like, don't get anything to do for the rest of the movie. And it's like
she has the one usurper friend who steals the jacket underhandedly. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, that's a shit move. But why is that here? Like, why? Like, I now know a little bit about this character, but it doesn't motivate how they act as and function as a group or like where this character is evolving or going. Yeah.
I actually will disagree with most of this.
Oh, lay it on me.
I really like that Buffy has no layers until she's the chosen one, because that to me tells me like literally anyone can be the chosen one and everyone is capable of growth. I think it's more annoying that none of her friends have any growth, even after they're confronted with deaths and vampires and things.
Yeah.
But I like that the fact that she is genuinely vapid and empty and shallow. She's not secretly anything from her friends, and she has to learn to change, and she wants to change the world on top of that when she sees, like, that she can do things and be powerful. And I think that's a way better message than if you're secretly smart, just be powerful. I'm like, if you're actually genuinely shallow or, like, you don't care about things, you can change and better yourself, I think is a way cooler message. It's not great for comedy, as you said, but in terms of just, like, a theme, I'm like, I do like that she's the chosen one, but she's also not the chosen one in any way that's obvious. Like, I really like at the very end, her and Luke Perry are dancing, and he says, "You're not like other girls," and she says, "Yes, I am," which I actually think is the theme that isn't quite hit hard enough, but of, like, no, all girls are awesome, and I'm just a regular girl.
And I think that's sort of the enduring message of Buffy, and I think one of the cool things is, like, she never really gets less interested in clothes. She never really gets less interested in all of the things that would, quote-unquote, make her vapid, even when she could kick people's asses, right?
Yeah.
And that was a quality I always really appreciated, and I like that that does show up here as well, is that, like, just because I can do this. I mean, it's interesting because the costume designers really butched her up as the film went on. I don't know if you noticed that. It was, like, bright pink tights and stuff in the early things, and then it just got into combat boots and, like, that kind of look, and it's like, now she kicks ass.
But then she still will go full, like, full Victorian dress for her dance, though, and then, like, she'll put a jacket on over top, but she's gonna ride a motorcycle. You gotta be safe. You gotta be safe. Yeah, I really like this, and, like, Merrick's whole thing about, like, defeat them your way, Buffy, like, use hairspray and look cool, like, there is nothing wrong with liking fashion.
Yeah.
And liking girly things is the whole point, even though it's, like, a subversion of the girl who gets killed in movies because she likes fashion. I think it's super cool. I wouldn't want her to secretly have been smart the whole time.
Yeah, it's like, what matters is that you care. That's the bottom line. And that's the thing that I thought was, like, the seed that was really good in this, is the idea, what bothered her about her friends wasn't the vapidness. It was the vapidness. It wasn't the, like, that they cared about a dance. It's that all they cared about was a dance. That was the issue, right? And I thought that was good.
And she could see what she used to be in them. And she was like, God, how did I ever not care this much? She just wants people to care.
Yeah. People are dead.
People are,
Come on,
it's
guys.
It's okay to care about the dance before your literal friends have died.
Yes.
Then you should be planning a funeral.
You need to plan a different event. Use the same decorations. What you got to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You just got to pivot. You got to pivot.
Do it for Candace.
Yeah, it can be a funeral about the environment. Mm.
I love this perspective, and I love the way you both pitch it, and I'm 100% on board with that. And I think my thing was, maybe smarter isn't the right way to do it, but something that makes her stand out from the four so that they don't all just kind of get washed in among one another.
Yeah.
But it does function with Diana, where you're saying the theme of, like, anyone can step up to the plate, but maybe the movie just didn't lean into that enough for me to notice or pick up on that theme.
I think the movie could have done
I
think the movie could have done something more along the lines of, like, her actual physical strength, if you wanted to pop out more. Like, maybe she's doing cheerleader backflips and she hits the fucking roof because she's the slayer. why aren't we focusing on the fact that her physical attributes are higher then if we're going for comedy in the first 30 minutes? Like, she should be doing crazier things than slicing a hot dog in half, which isn't hard to do. Why was in the scene cut away? Like, they couldn't figure out how to cut a hot dog?
Okay. This brings me... The time and space of this movie, the physical situation that things were in was always confusing. It was never clear where things were in the frame and stuff.
There was one shot where, like, Luke Perry looks down the barrel of the camera and, like, winks and finger guns. And I have no idea who that was to. It was when he's leaving the movie theater and, like, Buffy's boyfriend is dropping her off at the mall or whatever. And I'm like, was he winking at, and he's pointing down. So it seems like it's Buffy's boyfriend driving away in the car. But why and how? And why is he looking right into the camera?
Yeah.
It's baffling.
And David Arquette isn't in the shot. So you're like, is he saying bye to David Arquette? Like, what?
But
what
David
happened?
Arquette is 2 feet tall suddenly for some reason.
Yep.
Why is your sight line down there?
And if this shot is so bad, why is it here? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you just not put this weird shot in that didn't do anything?
Yeah.
However, though, when they drop change, order a singular hot dog, And the hot dog shows up, and without missing a beat, one grabs the dog and one grabs the bun, which is how these two idiots have decided to split a hot dog. Not cut it down the middle, but to break it up into its core components with no discussion? That 10 seconds is perfect comedy to me. Be like, two broke idiots, they're kind of burnouts, but they're best friends. How do they split a hot dog? And what I wouldn't give to be in a writer room where someone was like, one of them takes the dog and one of them takes the bun. And I'd be like, here's $1 million. That's the greatest joke.
You are amazing writers.
It's an incredible joke. Maybe Luke Perry is vegetarian. And that's how they split a hot dog.
Very
in that
possible.
Scenario.
That's how they film it.
Because also in that moment is the other great joke in this movie where they're hitting, the two guys are hitting on Buffy and the girls. And then they're like, wait a minute, you're the girls from the theater. We hate you. And it's the funniest thing in the world to be hitting on someone and just completely switch gears to go, we hate you, and eat a hot dog bun. And no hot dog.
It's so off the rails that it's like, yeah, this feels real because you wouldn't write it. Like that kind of feeling.
Yeah, really. Who would write this?
Yeah, exactly.
I think they hit just the right level of burnout for these two.
Yes, agreed.
The scene as well when David Arquette is floating outside of Luke Perry's window. And
oh
Luke Perry with, I didn't know Luke Perry was this good at comedy, frankly. Like he nailed the line reading of, dude, you're floating. Go home, man. And I'm like, that is the perfect level of burnout for a vampire movie. Yep. I love it.
Totally. The nonchalance with which he's like, friend's a vampire. I should leave. It's just so
leaving town. Goodbye
it's
forever.
Like, no freaking out. No, like, what are we going to do? It's like, nah, I'm just going to get in my van and go, man. This isn't worth it.
I love it. How often have you ever seen a hero character just be like, no, I'm out. But then still be very heroic.
Yes.
It's just, it, like, without being like a Han Solo type who's in it for money or some shit. He's just like, no, I'm in it for self-preservation. I think we're going to die.
Yeah.
But he's also like, it's really cool that like the poor guy is the street smart one in a survival way.
Yeah.
Like, and the rich people are just like, we'll just be rich and not die. And it's like, no, you're going
to
die.
Yeah. I think one of the issues with this movie is that I think, and this comes back to the like, who was Buffy in the first part of this movie, in the first 30 minutes of this movie, Pike is more likable until midway through the film. I think, is that yeah. like almost every time Pike came on screen, I was like, oh, finally, we're having some fun, you know? And like, it felt like he was the main character for part of it
yeah.
for me.
Yeah, he's definitely the biggest pop in the movie.
Yes,
like,
100%.
I get why they worked around him, actually.
Yes.
Like, because also the other line he has, it's right before David Arquette's killed, and he's like, if I get any drunker, I'll have sex with you. He's like, but you wouldn't call me.
I love that
so
line.
He's so upset about the calling and not the sex.
Which I think is great because 90s,
so
'90s movies were classic for gay panic.
We're so
no gay panic at all.
Nothing here.
None at all. It's like, but the issue is that you bail on me.
Here's the thing, though. '90s movies were very homophobic. Vampire movies, never. They're very much like vamp dudes love vamp dudes.
Ooh, true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all the leather.
It's all it's all like the paleness and the moods and the bites.
But these were non-vampires who didn't go for the homophobic joke. So that's nice.
Yeah.
That is nice.
True. Especially in a high school movie in the 90s.
Huge.
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 I also think part of the reason why Pike is kind of more charming and likable in that first 30 over Buffy, and one of the reasons that it works and they're having a problem with Buffy, is that we're always showing up late to a fun thing Pike is doing, and we're showing up way too early to a fun thing that Buffy is doing.
Yes.
Like, even something as simple as, like, my friend bought the cool leather jacket that I like, but she tricked me into not getting it. It's like, that's like a 40-minute payoff with two scenes for, like, a barely joke.
Yeah.
But then, like, Pike shows up, and it's like, they've already snuck into a movie theater, and they haven't paid for it. And they just, like, drop that line. But we didn't get them sneaking into a movie theater. Like, even just, like, Pike is working at an auto shop. Is he going to need to fix something later? Is he Buffy's mechanic in the movie? It's like, no, we're just showing up late to this scene. Then he's buying a dirt bike in an alleyway randomly in the final scene. They're like, what's the story behind it? Fucking don't worry about it. He's just living his own life.
Truly don't think about it.
And I kind of think that that's part of the charm of Pike, is that he is always a beat late and that makes it funny and very likable, whereas Buffy's things are always kind of interjecting a beat too early, it almost feels.
Yeah, the movie has an interesting sense of timing. Like, there's a lot of things that kind of go too late or go, like, it's the cheerleading sequence off the top, where I was like, has it been half an hour? This is the longest cheerleading sequence I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, because I think, I guess the credits are probably going. It really was very long for a scene that wasn't quite matching the music that was playing.
No.
They weren't like cheering on beat, and I'm like, yeah, they're nailing it. They were synchronized, but not to what was playing.
Yep.
And they weren't like hyping the crowd up. They're actually not even facing the crowd. If you can see where the crowd is, they're facing the camera, which is a terrible way to cheer
a
crowd.
They're facing the hoop, essentially.
Yes. Yes, yeah.
They're facing the door, because the door is below the hoop. So it's a very long sequence. Some sequences, I think, they do run long, and I think legally they had to, because how long does a movie have to be long enough to see a movie? Because you're at an hour 28.
You think it was going to fall short of movie length?
It can happen.
I don't think it was going to fall short. I want to say 73 minutes, like an hour 13.
Yes, I think that's it.
Is what it is. And then, anything shorter than that, it's considered a short. So I don't think it was, we need to stretch these scenes out short. But I see what you're, I don't think it was padding. I think it was just fluff.
But
it was fluff, not padding.
But
there's legally a difference.
There is a difference.
The cheerleading was too long.
Mm. And also, too, I just feel like, and this is just the Canadian in me, is that any time in, like, American, and obviously the school system is so totally different, but we grow up on American media. And, you know, watching American TV stuff, and it's like, cheerleading's super important. I'm like, I've never seen a cheerleader in my life. Why is this so deadly important to American schools? I don't get it.
It's so funny because Steph said literally the exact same thing when we started watching the movie. Steph was like, are cheerleaders really a thing? And I'm like, well, they do exist. Yes, they are. They are real. They're just not as important up here because football isn't a thing in the same way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But these are basketball cheerleaders.
And
true.
And we have basketball. Mm. We're inside. It's warm.
That's true. We could have inside cheerleaders, but we just don't care.
My high school.
And like
my high school had them.
Uh-huh.
And this is weird. They were the unpopular girls.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like the girls who weren't in any other group. And like, they were like bad because like no one wanted to see cheerleaders. We were like, what are you doing? Why are you cheering?
Huh. That's so interesting. See, I went to an arts high school. So the cheerleaders were just the dance major. That makes sense.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
They were the like.
That absolutely tracks.
Yeah, totally. Pretty popular girls in TNA. You know, like that was the vibe.
Mm-hmm. No, I've never seen outside of a basketball game, a real, like an NBA basketball game, like a real cheerleader.
Yeah. Never seen a cheerleader in the wild.
No, not in the wild.
Well, you don't want to make eye contact as a thing because they will run.
They're very skittish. Very skittish.
Moves, yeah.
I set up a wildlife cam to try to catch a cheerleader.
Yeah. If you want to see him making a pyramid, you got to make a little bluff. It's a real planet Earth kind of situation.
You got to make a bluff.
Oh, actually, I was an extra on the show Wildcats, and I got to watch them do the cheer stunts.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Back when I lived in Vancouver, they did the exact, like, they go behind the pillar. Because it's...
The Texas switch is what it's called in movies and TV shows.
Yeah, it's so funny watching the professionals, like, do all these flips, and then fucking girl from High School Musical, Sharpay, whatever her name is, would just walk on set, and she hadn't done anything, and flip her hair back and pretend she'd done it all, and I'm like, you liar! Just flipped your hair back. That girl worked all day on that.
How do you live with yourself?
You liar. I love the idea of you as a background extra walking through set just yelling, you liar, at things that you see that are false on a television program as if you've never understood the medium you got a job in. You liar. Can we get this woman off set, please?
I want to be paid still.
She keeps walking through doors that don't go anywhere and then yelling at us.
She pooped in the prop toilet. It says it's not a real toilet right on it.
Why would you give me that backstory?
I don't know.
Pooping of all the things.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about Paul Rubens for a minute.
Oh,
well, you must.
We must.
It's legally obligated.
A man I forgot was in this movie.
A man I forgot existed.
Yeah. That easy to do, I would say. Paul Rubens, no shade.
Yeah, his name came up, and I was like, Paul Rubens. Oh, Pee Wee Herman's in this.
Right.
Okay. And then he showed up, and I'm like, no, that's Paul Rubens. That's not Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. This is firmly Paul Rubens. Pee Wee Herman has nothing to do with this film.
And I don't know if I'm fully into it, but I really do like that he is the only actor who turned the dial up to 18.
Yes.
That, like, this movie is camp, and there are times where, like, Luke Perry gets it, and he's like, I'm at a 10 out of 10. And Paul Rubens broke the scale. Like,
yes.
No concept of reality or where to rein it back.
It's insane they left the entire death scene
in.
Absolutely. That's what's wild. Like, they left it in... And they put it in the bloopers and the credits, and it's like, you really only needed to put this one time.
Like, when I think about that scene, like, even in a movie this campy, I'm like, okay, man. Like, but it feels like as soon as they yelled cut, he went, yeah, what the fuck ever, you know, man? I don't know.
I had fun with one take.
Yeah, exactly. This was one take and no more. No more. Mm.
It is a little weird that he is so big, though, and then the rest of the movie, like, it's weird the directors didn't make him do less, or they didn't make the other actors do more.
Yes.
Because he's the only one at 18.
Yeah. He is acting in, he's not making any incorrect choices, but they just should have edited around it, maybe, because he is in, like, Austin Powers vampire movie.
Yes, 100%.
He's doing that. And there's nothing wrong. Like, that's a type of movie that works. That's a full-on genre parody. We are going way over the fucking
top.
Scary
movie.
Yeah.
Not another vampire movie, a movie that exists.
Yeah, a real movie. You are absolutely right.
Could have starred Paul Rubens.
Yeah.
No problem. Yeah, but so he's at 18 and everyone else is at 8 to 10. And it's such a weird jump. But yeah, I would never want to lose the little death scene with the little kick.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a weird scene because I'm also like, so do you not die when you get staked? Like, what is happening plot-wise?
There's a lot of logic, magic logic in this movie. I'm like, what? what? Like, okay, the whole thing where Merrick is just reborn with the knowledge why wouldn't you just give the Slayer the knowledge? Problem solved. Doesn't need to be trained. Why do you make this extra guy? There's a lot of problems.
That was your problem with Merrick? Because I was watching that scene with Merrick where he's like, I'm born with the knowledge of my past 100 lives. And I'm like, at what age does the knowledge kick in? Like, you come out of the womb, like, full of 100 years of knowledge. Just like, you're like, hand me my fedora and my cape.
I literally haven't figured out eating yet, but
I know
I
how to train
know.
A slayer.
I know eventually this has to happen.
Adult Donald Sutherland comes out of the womb just already.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just that.
It's just a full Benjamin Button effect. Oh, no.
And then it, like, makes it so weird for, like, when you get to the show and you're like, wait, there's a Watcher Council of just regular dudes who haven't been reincarnated? Where's Merrick? He should be alive again.
Yeah, the regular dude thing made a lot more sense. But, yeah, the vampires, too, it's like, wait, do they die? Do they get...
They don't turn into dust.
Why
also,
can they fly?
I also absolutely love that the Chosen One's mark is just a very normal mole. Just like a mole literally thousands of people must have. Like, it's not like a Harry Potter lightning scar.
No,
it's not a birthmark that looks like a moon. It's just a regular mole.
Yeah, I mean, well, her spidey sense is literally cramps, so.
Oh, boy. Which, hate that.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. I'm like, this was very clearly written by someone who has never in their life had cramps.
No, because... Like, I get a spidey sense for vampires makes sense.
Yes, totally.
But something that immediately puts you at a disadvantage, because I can't walk the dog when I have cramps, let alone fight a vampire.
Let me tell you something right now. I get a day off in my own brain when I have cramps. I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, today's not a day. We're just not going to do anything.
Call it in
today's
sick to work.
Today's Tuesday again?
Nope,
negative Tuesday?
Skipping this one.
Skip, okay.
Whatever can be skipped is skipped.
Yeah, so I'm out on patrol. I get cramps. I'm Buffy. I'm like, well, I guess I'm going home.
Going
no vampires
home.
To kill tonight. I've got cramps.
Yep. Is the apocalypse happening? Don't care. I'm going home to have tea and watch, I don't know, Queer Eye.
I'm going to pop a Midol. I'm going to get a hot water bottle. Mm-hmm. And we're going to ride this out. Worst, like, and like, it's like, and sometimes I think about it, I'm like, yeah, like, it's a, like a vampires are blood and your cramps are blood kind of.
Yeah.
But like, it's I'm really glad they dropped it for the show. What a dumb idea.
Yeah, the equivalent would be like, for those of you who don't get cramps, the equivalent would be like, hey, what if every time Spider-Man sensed danger, it felt like he had been kicked in the balls? Like, yeah, that is, that's the rough equivalent.
And like, every fight scene has to start with him being like, oh, yeah. Why? Yeah, why exactly. Would we? Yeah.
And if the cramps start when vampires are there, they must not go away till she kills them. So it's cramp time the whole time.
Yeah. Also, the whole thing just gives me the vibe that Joss Whedon was sitting at home and being like, cramps, period, blood. God, I'm smart.
Oh, like, the dots are all connected,
100%.
Baby. Like, I've connected the dots thing from BuzzFeed Unsolved. You haven't connected shit.
Yeah, 100%. That's how it felt. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wish they'd put it in the show, though, because what a different show it would be where she would not date any vampires if every time Angel or Spike got close to her, she was like, get the fuck away from me, you're giving me cramps.
What a short show.
No Angel, no Spike, no relationships with vampires. No vampire sex tonight, still cramps.
Yeah, the era of the sexy vampire is kind of over if it's the era of the cramp as well. There's no sexy vampire anymore. See, I like the mole for how quickly they wrote it in and immediately out.
Yes.
As well. Yeah. Yep. So this is, I think, almost like similar to what I was mentioning before, like the jacket thing, to be like, it a joke that arrives way too early and overstays its welcome just for one tiny fizzle of a punch, which is like, you've set up this mole birthmark thing. She's like, I've removed it. Okay, that's kind of a laugh, I guess. But you could have just not set it up and still had that joke in to be like, yeah. I'm willing to bet you have the birthmark. She's like, and she could just be like, I've removed it. What are you talking about? That's still a funny subversion of something like the prophetic character would say. We've wasted just a bunch of time setting up and then undoing a whole plot moment.
Yeah, like you can hear the whooshing sound as the joke just rushes by you, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't even land as a joke for me. Like, it's not, like, it could be funny. It's not done in a way that's funny. Because I actually remember this scene also from when I was a kid when I'd watched this. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, moles can be cancerous. You should get those from...
Like, wow, you're a responsible child.
It wasn't even like a thing. I have like a lot of moles. It wasn't even like a thing to me that she was like shallow or like, cause like, you know, like Clueless has all like the nose job jokes and things like that. Yeah. It wasn't like a shallow thing to me. I'm like, good for your health. You got your moles removed. So it didn't land at all as a kid. And it didn't land as an adult when I got what they were going for either. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the mole don't work. The cramps don't work. Luke Perry works.
Luke Perry works. David Arquette works.
David Arquette's crushing it.
Yeah.
I forgot the line, kill him a lot. That was very funny.
Kill him a lot.
Yeah, that was kill good. Him there are a some lot. Good lines in here.
She doesn't kill a lot of vampires, though. I find it very weird at the end when they're like, they get back to the dance and there's dozens of vampires with stakes in them that Buffy didn't kill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, who killed these guys?
I mean, they showed, I think, at least one or two random students kill some vampires.
They showed, I think, just one. I think the girl who then got killed, not Hilary Swank, but the other friend.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Hilary Swank gets comedically cross-eyed, knocked unconscious by the principal.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Which is unexpected. That was a moment where I'm like, Hilary Swank, you haven't been turning it up to Paul Rubens 18 until just now, which is an interesting choice.
It really feels like the director, just depending on the day, was like big or medium, you know, right. Like just was giving them complete, or depending on the person that when the gym scene starts, there's those like five vampires at the door, and if you watch the one in the middle is in a different movie than the other four. They're going past 18. They're okay. At 25. It is wild.
Yeah, that scene is another one, what you were talking about earlier, that just goes too long. Like, yeah. She goes out to fight them, and they kind of all just stand and pose like a Mortal Kombat, like, start screen.
That part is so funny.
And they're just gyrating and waiting for their chance. It's very weird. You're could we pick up the pace of this fight scene?
Every, no, bide your time. Bide your time.
Every single moment I was fixated on a different extra and how they chose to idle in the background while waiting for their opportunity. Like, ooh, what was the gif-able motion that they chose to do in the background?
Yeah. What's your boomerang on Instagram? Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. They couldn't, they weren't moving around in the space. They were just creating a 3-second loop that they could all operate on.
They definitely, so I think they thought maybe the camera was gonna pan, but it just stayed, and they're just like, oh, so we just look like we don't move that way then. Okay, weird choice.
Yeah, you really could have replaced them with cardboard cutouts, and I think it actually probably would have been less distracting.
I would have liked the level of 18 that would be.
Right?
She's fighting cardboard cutouts.
Either lean in harder or calm down.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think I've said everything I need to say about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. How you feeling?
Diana? Pretty good. Yeah, that's most of my stuff.
Kaya, you got any heavy hits that you want to lay on us?
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, the vampires looked weird. That's pretty much it.
It's weird they had like goblin ears when they get vampirized.
Yeah, goblin Vulcan. The ear differential was strange to me.
Yeah, it had a strong last minute Dracula costume kind of vibe to it.
I was
actually really surprised the new vampires got weird ears, because I thought that might be a mark that you're like an ancient vampire.
Yeah.
Because like, Paul Rubens and Rutger Hauer had it. I'm like, oh, okay, so they're like the old vampires. Then David Arquette showed up and also had weird ears. I'm like, oh, so. So they suck your blood out, your ears get long?
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Or like basketball player guy when he showed up with like weird ears and visible fangs and everybody's like, no, it's cool. Let him play.
Let him play, coach.
Let him in, coach.
This seems fine. He's literally flying, but I guess this still is fine.
Oh, that seems
There's
amazing.
No rule that says a vampire can't play basketball.
I suppose that's true.
The coach was like, well, yeah, I'll pull him out, but the basket still counts. The basket still counts.
I did like that coach.
That coach is great. He didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
I found it weird that they changed Paul Rubens' costume mid-movie as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they start with, like, him and Lothos, Rutger Hauer, are, like, we're the old school, like, we're wearing velvet and silks kind of vampires. And then just, like, randomly they cut to Paul Rubens. It's like, nah, I'm just a dude in a leather jacket now. And he has a joke about it again where he's just like, oh, that was a new jacket. It's like, okay,
I would guess the leather jacket hid his arm better.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it was.
Because
and the wardrobe department didn't realize until they got to filming that scene.
Yeah, they were like, oh shit, your arm is super visible in the silks, because like they don't hide anything. But a leather jacket, you can hide an arm in.
That makes a lot of sense. And they were like, but we've already filmed some, so let's give him a line about how he changed his costume. That does make sense.
Excellent. Fixed the movie, you guys. Joss Whedon, you're welcome. I recognize
we did it.
That leather jackets hide arms.
We learned something here today.
It's all about learning. We always learn something here on the podcast. Let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this movie if you could change anything? But before we do ask the final question, we want to remind you, as we do every single week, to please take a moment to subscribe, follow, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you're listening to this right now. Hit a few buttons. It's free, it's simple, it helps support the show, and it warms our hearts.
It warms our hearts. We won't even stop playing. Do it right now. You can keep listening and hit the 5 stars. You can do it on Spotify now, there's 5 stars. Podcast Addict also lets you leave reviews now. We got like 5 to 8 more minutes of podcast to go. Start hitting those buttons, you guys, right this minute. Don't wait.
Right this minute. Free way to support the show. Do it for a few of the other podcasts you listen to. It makes a difference to podcasts like ourselves. And as well, if you want to support the show monetarily, you can hit us up over on Patreon. Our Patreon page is where you can sign up. You can subscribe on a monthly or a yearly basis, get cool bonuses for doing it. We have exclusive episodes of the podcast that come out every single month on Patreon. This month's episode was on The Witcher Season 2. That is up there right now, waiting for you. That's in the chamber. That's ready to go.
It's just sitting there waiting for you. And guess what? If you sign up at the $10 level, every other episode's waiting for you too. You get access to all of them. Immediately. There's a lot.
The whole back catalog.
And
there's no obligation. You can cancel or change any given month. So if you got $10 in the budget this month, hit us up. It makes a world of difference to us and you get cool bonuses. If your budget changes next month, there's no pressure, no obligation. Cancel, drop it down, move it around, whatever
flip
you got to do.
Flip,
put the game down, flip it, and reverse it. If you sign up at the Isiornir Flippa level, then you can put the game down, flip it, and reverse it. So check it out over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's Patreon. patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And now let's go into the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Niana, what would you change?
Me first? Excellent. My change is actually just going to be at the end. I talked about this briefly, how I liked that Buffy was like every other girl, and it, kind of every girl has the potential to be Buffy in this movie, I think, to be the chosen one. But I don't like that none of the other students get an arc of learning anything. So my big change is actually, it's going to be pretty close to the finale of season three and all the students.
Nice, yeah.
And she gets the students to help before the vampires show up. So like they're ready for the vamps, and they're like, they do acknowledge that people have been dying, and they kind of help her out. They're like, yes, we have stakes hidden under tables, or we didn't invite them in, or we got Molotov cocktails or something. Like, I want the students to be ready and helping and show that everyone is capable of growth and have a and it still can be funny. Like they'll still be overwhelmed and not know what they're doing, but they're going to try and they're going to be good people. And I think that's more fun for me and a better lesson of like, we all could be Buffy. And it's more like the show because the show's better.
Yes.
We all know the show's better.
We all know the show's better.
So that's my big change. The rest is pretty good. I'd like the fights to be better, but they didn't have much time. So
yeah.
I like how you threw in Molotov cocktails as a weapon there. How they could burn down the gym, perhaps.
Well, like, you're supposed to burn down the gym.
You're supposed to burn down the gym.
I mean, sure, Joss. We'll burn down the fucking gym if it's that petty and important to you.
We get it. You hated gym class. Jeez.
Burn that shit down. That's my change.
I love that. Kaya, what is your change? What would you change about this?
You know, initially I wanted to come in and just be like, the show. I would just make it the show. But, you know, I feel like I've actually become, I feel like you talked me into this. I think I like this movie better now than I did before this podcast. Ooh. So I think what I would actually really like to see happen with this movie is if they had just been able to have more time and a stronger director. Because there's so many good elements to it. I think if they had just been able to, like, slow the hell down and actually choreograph. There we go. That's what words are. And just choreograph things and actually like take their time to like make the costumes work and make the stunts work. I think this could have been a really, really fun movie.
So more time.
Yeah. I think more time and just a stronger director who had a little more experience. I think you could see the inexperience on the director.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, what do you change?
I would recast Lothos.
I don't
think Rutger Hauer works in this role.
I don't think he does either, but I love Rutger Hauer.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
Because I don't think he plays it as the straight man, which I think is a way that this character works. Like if this character was like sincerely kind of like the one. All of the other vampires are like bumbling buffoons. It is David Arquette's burnout dude.
Right.
It is Paul Rubens as an absolute idiot who can't even have grace in a death scene. If Rutger Hauer played it as an absolute straight man of like, I am smart, I am intelligent, I'm fucking cool, I am in like a crisp suit, like I'm not even in silly clothes, then maybe it could work as Rutger Hauer, but right now it's not comedic and it's not the straight man either. Mm-hmm. Like it's not the evil boss with a bumbling sidekick. It is just a man who like when Paul Rubens clearly goes off script and does something stupid, Rutger Hauer's not playing with him, but is also not comedically denying the bit either. So it is just in this no man's land of comedy where it's like you either need to get grumpier and more serious about this or you need to start playing. And I just think that he is not the actor to do either in this scenario. So I think he just needs to be recast with either a full-on comedic actor to dial it up to 18 and have all of the vampires be insane, or a younger, sexier, cooler, I'm playing this as I hate how dumb my sidekick is kind of a guy.
Yeah. What I'm hearing from that is less uncle energy. That's less what I'm getting.
Fewer at least one fewer uncle.
Okay, I changed my answer. It's fewer uncles would be what I would change about this movie.
I can get behind that, yes. I like Rutger Hauer in other roles, but he is not shining here in any way. He doesn't feel like he's the big bad of the movie. Paul Rubens does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that. Either full comedic or just like a very serious, like Shakespearean actor who never breaks.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's Michael Caine in Muppet Christmas Carol. Oh. Like you get one real actor
right,
and then
right.
surround him with comedy.
Anthony Hopkins as Lothos. Yes. You know, 100%. Like you just go hard in. Yeah.
don't blink, the whole thing.
I like these changes. Yeah, the whole school comes together. We get a more established director who has maybe a little bit more confidence, or at least shots that always make sense as opposed to sight lines that work. Yeah. You know, like, a little bit.
Get it. Yeah. Time, space, one time, shot space. Leads to the other, you know?
Oh, you would love to see it. You would love to see it. And then we recast Lothos. And I think that improves this considerably.
Yeah. I think we've done it.
All right. I think we've done it.
You're welcome, Joss Whedon.
I think that's going to do
He's listening.
Oh, no.
What else does he have to do?
Oh! Suck
it. On Joss Whedon.
You're never working.
Love it. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. We don't know what we're covering next week because we've completely changed our schedule. Because
damn you, Morbius!
Movie theaters aren't open and things don't exist anymore and Morbius doesn't exist. Goodbye. So we don't know what we're covering next week, but just keep an eye on our social media. We'll tweet about it over at From Superheroes on Twitter. We'll let you know what we're going to be covering next week. More than likely, we're going to be doing a few weeks of Diana and Andrew picks. We did this once before, a year, 2 years ago.
Early in the pandemic when like everything got pushed back again and we didn't have movies to cover.
Right. Yeah. I think the first time we were like, it's going to be James Bond month. And then they were like, you can see No Time to Die in 2 years. And I think we did a month of host picks where me and Diana just picked some of our faves. So we're probably going to do that now over the next bit, but if you're looking for more things to listen to, Kaya has a new podcast on the From Superheroes Network.
Heck yeah, I do. I with my partner Steph, we are doing the Fandom Show, where we bring people on to talk about their fandoms, and it can be everything from Buffy, which we do have an episode on if you want to hear more of my thoughts on Joss Whedon, and there are more, from that to we're down the road going to do things like Star Wars. We have a space episode coming up. Anything that could be considered a fandom, we want to talk about it. So come check us out. It's super nerdy and very sweet and optimistic.
Yeah, and Jocelyn Getty of I Hate It But I Love It on the network, also doing Musical Flops, which is a fandom you don't think is a fandom, but she figured it out.
She figures it out. Makes it work.
So good.
Lots to love on the Fandom Show. It's so enjoyable and enthusiastic and fun. I love listening to the Fandom Show.
Yeah, you can find it over at thefandomshow.com or search the Fandom Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's there.
And if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamey, IVIMEY.
Oh, me? You can reach me at Words of Diana. Check out my pinned tweet.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.